WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
A bill that would require guns to be removed from the home of accused domestic abusers is on the way to Governor Pritzker's desk. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The measure is named Karina's Bill, in honor of Karina Gonzalez. In July 2023, the little village woman was fatally shot by her husband, who also killed her 15-year-old daughter. The governor's signature would close a loophole that allowed some people accused of domestic abuse to keep their guns, even after their firearm licenses are revoked. Lawmakers and advocates say this is an important step toward protecting survivors from threats of gun violence. For more on what this legislation means for Illinois, we turn to Stephanie Love Patterson, president and CEO of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. We also talked to Maralia Negron, director of policy, advocacy, and research at the Chicago-based group The Network, which advocates against domestic violence. It's been a year and a half since the death of Karina Gonzalez, and advocates had been trying to get this loophole closed for even longer than that. So I started by asking Stephanie and Maralia how they're feeling now that Karina's bill is finally heading to Pritzker's desk. Here's Stephanie.
I'm feeling a sense of relief. I was excited that the bill is on its way for the governor's signature. I know that there's still some additional protections that we need. We still need to fight. It's like we have that celebratory moment where we're thrilled to be at this moment, but we realize there's still so much work to be done in order to protect individuals from the issue of domestic violence.
What comes to mind for you, Maralia? We're at this moment now. Pritzker just has to sign it.
Yeah, I think it's surreal to an extent. I know I'm still processing the passage of the bill. It was really emotional when, you know, the final roll call came on the House floor and I was in the gallery with the family. And, you know, I think it's one of those moments where it's a long time coming. Nothing will ever kind of do justice to them. But I think that this is a really strong signal to survivors that the General Assembly hears you and cares about your experience of domestic violence, especially in this case, firearm-involved domestic violence.
Right. Well, I want to take a moment to remember what happened to Karina Gonzalez and her family. She went to the police. She received an order of protection against her husband, Jose Alvarez, from a judge. Remind us, what specifically does an order of protection do, Stephanie?
So an order of protection can do many things. It can be, it can offer remedies like staying away from the perpetrator, staying away from the victim at their school, at their home, at church, at various places, at their family members' homes. It can also have remedies that provide protections for the children as well, because oftentimes perpetrators of abuse will say, well, I'll go after the kids. I know where they go to school. So it could offer protections that way. It offers protections in terms of mandating them to attend batterer intervention programs. Mm. And also in the form of weapons, if there are weapons in the house, that they are to surrender those weapons. And that's where the importance of Karina's bill comes in, because it's helping with executing that remedy and making sure that weapons are indeed removed from the home.
But even before we get to the idea of the gun, with an order of protection, her husband was still able to enter the home. How does something like that even happen, Maralia?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in every case, a survivor who is receiving that order of protection has to know that law enforcement involvement is part of that order of protection for enforcement. How an order of protection is actually enforced is you call local law enforcement, they show up and enforce that order of protection for most of the remedies in that order of protection. So in this case specifically, you know, without going too much into the details for the family's privacy, I think that it was a case where he was living there, the family kind of was back and forth, and he was able to be in the home. Exclusive possession of the home is part of an order of protection. You can request that, and okay. then law enforcement can go and remove that person.
So Jose Alvarez, he did have his firearm owner's ID or FOID card revoked by state police, but not his gun, Stephanie?
Correct. Yeah, he was still in possession of his gun. We know in the domestic violence community that oftentimes, even though someone reaches out and they get an order of protection, they take legal action, they do whatever it is that they need to do in order to keep themselves safe and to reestablish power in their own relationships, sometimes that's when they're at the most risk. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we say leaving does not always equal safety. And we know that oftentimes perpetrators of domestic violence can become more enraged even when something like this exists. And so, yes, he still had his gun. And, yes, he intended to use it, and he carried that out.
I need to have you repeat that. You said leaving does not always equal safety.
That's correct. Leaving does not always equal safety. And those of us in the DV community often, when we're providing counseling and advocacy through either of our organizations, we talk to survivors of domestic violence about what it means to get an order of protection. What does it mean to regain power and control in your life, and what the potential dangers might be of taking action like that? So there may be certain things like going to court to get an order of protection, but also a tremendous amount of safety planning goes along with that to make sure that, because maybe they can't stay at home. Mm-hmm. Maybe they have to flee and go to a domestic violence shelter, or they have to go to a friend or family member's home.
Yeah. So, Marlia, why don't you fill us in then on the loophole that Karina's bill is hoping to close here?
Yeah, absolutely. So in every order of protection, when that is entered by default, this is prior to Karina's bill and is still existing law, a FOID card is suspended automatically without you checking a box related to firearms. What the correction in Karina's bill really is about is the firearm remedy or relief section as part of an order of protection. So Stephanie and I talked a little bit about how, you know, orders of protection are really intended to be comprehensive, one-stop shop. You can get a multitude of types of relief in orders of protection. What this bill was about was strengthening the firearm remedy in that order of protection. And so what we were seeing was all too often that when a survivor was experiencing firearm-involved threats as part of their experience of domestic violence, that person's FOID card was just being suspended. There was actually no real enforcement because under the current law, you can just fill out what's called a disposition record and say, I'm transferring my guns to my brother. He has a valid FOID card. And there's no real follow-through. I mean, if you have that sheet of paper and if a judge asks you for it, you can say, look, I came into compliance with the law. I don't have my guns. They're in someone else's possession.
And with this new legislation, firearms and FOID cards, they have to be surrendered within 24 hours.
That is correct.
Is that right?
If a survivor is requesting specifically firearms relief as part of their order of protection. So the underlying law doesn't change saying that all FOID cards are suspended. What we did in Karina's bill was when firearm specifically relief is requested from the survivor and it's survivor driven, there are two options under that section of relief. There is a surrender order saying that you have 24 hours to surrender your firearms and your FOID or your CCL. Or there is a search warrant opportunity where if the judge makes specific findings under the law, they can issue a search warrant as part of that order of protection, which is the kind of most robust piece of the legislation and where the most teeth are when there's that immediate credible threat of danger.
Can I say that we know that in the U.S., more than 600 women are shot to death by their intimate partner. And we know that in homes where there are firearms, that the percentage that they will be killed is like 500%.
So this is why it's so important then that we target firearms in the legislation, right, to protect survivors.
Absolutely.
What will have to happen for the bill to be implemented effectively, Stephanie?
I think, and Melinda and I were talking earlier that it really comes down to enforcement. So the law is there, and so we really need law enforcement to take it seriously as if any other protections for victims and survivors of domestic violence. We can have all of the laws on the books that we want, but it really comes down to those individual situations and, you know, making sure that those remedies are properly enforced by the police.
Cook County sheriffs, they've previously said we don't have enough money to recover weapons. So will this legislation help overcome that, Marlia?
It's my understanding that it would. While there is no kind of financial piece to this package, I think, the Cook County Sheriff's Office was at the table since the very beginning, and they were the only law enforcement agency in the state that was really willing to come out and say, we are in support of this. We think that this will help us do a better job at enforcing firearm removal as part of our response to domestic violence. And so we were appreciative to have them at the table. Since kind of inception of this bill in January of 2023, when we first started to work on this, we started to have more conversations with law enforcement. And I think that we ultimately all had the same goal of we want to safeguard survivors. It was just a matter of how do we get there? And thankfully, at the end, we were able to get all law enforcement to a place where they were neutral on the bill.
Anything to add, Stephanie? You're nodding.
Yeah, no, I just agree wholeheartedly, and we're thankful that the Sheriff's Department was there and really, you know, understood the urgency of a bill like this and just how important it is to remove firearms.
I'm curious about downstate police departments, though. I mean, they've got fewer resources, fewer personnel. I know that Republican State Senator Chapin Rose, who's a critic of Karina's bill, said that rural police departments are going to have a lot of issues meeting the bill's requirements. Does he have a point?
Yeah, I think that to that, we spent a lot of time on this specifically because we wanted the strongest version of the bill that's actually going to work. I mean, why would we pass a bill that's just going to make survivors think that they're getting firearms relief when they're really not, right? I mean, that's counterintuitive to what we're trying to accomplish. And so in the language, we are very prescriptive about the fact that under certain conditions, law enforcement can petition the court for more time to execute the search warrant if needed. And that was directly a request from law enforcement stakeholders at the table saying, for these smaller counties where there's a few law enforcement officers, or we might have to, you know, collaborate with Illinois State Police or sheriffs from another county, we need some safeguards in place so that we can actually effectuate these in a timely manner while also weighing survivor safety. And so that is very detailed in the language of the law now. Well, not law, but once it gets signed, it will be
right.
The law.
Still a bill.
To petition the court for more time and for a judge to make that determination against survivor safety to make sure that the search warrant can be effectuated correctly.
Thanks for clearing that up. So are you optimistic, Stephanie, that Karina's bill will make a real difference?
I think it will make a difference. I think, you know, we know, I mentioned a couple of the statistics around...
which are alarming.
Yes, yes. The increased likelihood that someone will be killed or killed by a partner when there are firearms in the household. So I think by having this opportunity to have the search warrants to look for weapons in the house and to surrender those weapons as a part of the remedy of the of the order of protection really does give us some hope. Again, we always know we have to look to the root of the issue of domestic violence in general.
Yes.
And work on prevention. But as a remedy, this is something that we were very excited about. Again, working with the network for the past 2 years to help advocate for this is a huge win for us, and ultimately a win for survivors of domestic violence. And I'm hoping that individuals who are out there that are listening, and I've been seeing a lot of interesting articles about this in the news, will feel a sense of hope for those that are living in households where they know that there are weapons in the household and who are literally scared and wondering and praying that they won't end up another statistic.
Yeah. Marlia, I mean, we've talked a lot about the strong points here, but do you think that this legislation goes far enough?
Yeah, you know, I think that that is something that, again, Stephanie and I were talking about earlier. I don't know that this bill is really a reaction to a tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. It's a reaction to a flaw in our system. Yeah. We know that Karina and Daniela's case was not an anecdote. We know that from the statistics. We know that from talking to survivors. But we don't want to always be reaction. We want to get to the root problem of domestic violence. So in the larger kind of scale of things, no, we know that this is not a solution to domestic violence. But we know that for survivors who are looking for orders of protection as a tool in their toolbox to achieve safety or get at safety, we know that this will go a long ways to safeguard them from firearm-involved domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And I also think ultimately we're not able to make an assessment of how on the spot we were with this legislation until we actually see it roll out, until right. we see implementation and are able to monitor that. We may have to come back and make some corrections to the language. We feel really good about where we are. We are very cautiously optimistic, but we can never kind of be sure until we actually make sure that it works on the ground as it's intended to.
Stephanie brings up a good point, right? The end goal here is to stop domestic violence from happening and not just respond in the aftermath.
Absolutely.
Is there more that you are doing with the National Network to End Domestic Violence that sort of helps tackle exactly that?
Absolutely. So we're working on prevention efforts. We're working on providing support to coalitions. We are over coalitions in 56 states and territories in this country to help provide support for them, to support the organizations that they work with that ultimately provide services to victims and survivors of domestic violence. And so we have done a lot of work with understanding firearms and helping people and educating our constituents about firearms. We do a lot of work on the Hill to help with legislation around issues like this, around issues about prevention and all of those things, to help educate individuals right. on what it means when we're talking about firearms. What does domestic violence mean? What does safety look like for victims and survivors
Absolutely.
Of domestic violence?
And before I let you both go, Marley, I mean, are there misconceptions about survivors that you want to clear up? I know that you said in another conversation, you know, part of the challenge here in tackling the issue is just educating people on what domestic violence is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in some cases, domestic violence might not even be in a community's vocabulary or their idea of what domestic violence might be a little construed, right? They might think that it's a battered and bruised woman. And we know that there are a ton of tactics that go into domestic violence. Keeping control and power over that other person is the fundamental pieces of domestic violence, right? And I think that we need to start shifting the conversation. And what I would say is, if you're fortunate enough to not either have experienced domestic violence or not know someone who's experienced domestic violence, what folks really should know is that survivors aren't a monolith. What safety means to me might not be what safety means to you, and vice versa. And so when there are cases where a survivor maybe isn't seeking an order of protection, or maybe hasn't gone to a shelter, or hasn't, you know, done what society tells them to do, instead of kind of judging that survivor, you know, maybe try and understand what their idea of safety looks like. It might not look like what we've historically been told it looks like.
We're going to leave it there. We've been talking with Marlia Negron, who is with the Chicago-based group, The Network, and with Stephanie Love Patterson with the National Network to End Domestic Violence. If you or someone you know is facing domestic violence and you need help, call or text the Illinois Domestic Violence Hotline anytime at 877-863-6338. The hotline's free and it's confidential. You can provide crisis safety planning for you, referrals to emergency housing if you need it, and other support services. So don't hesitate to call. Once again, 877-2-END-D-V. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Ellie Gilbert Bear and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset brings you breaking news with insightful and critical conversations. To stay in the know, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen or visit us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again tomorrow.
My name is Liz, and student, as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.